The following program is sponsored by Friends of Life Outreach International.
I looked back at her and I said, "What do you want?" And those are the last words I ever spoke to my mother. I went home a few hours after that, and I walked to the back door, and there was a note on the door, and it said, "Please don't come in. I shot myself, and I don't want you to see."
Through tragic circumstances, Chris Capehart learned how to beat the odds and achieve a meaningful life. Next.
Welcome to Life Today. I'm Randy Robinson. Sheila Walsh is with me.
Hey.
And Sheila, I can tell that today's guest is going to be fabulous because not only is he a graduate of Oral Roberts University,
as am I,
right? But he was on Youngblood, and there's a few of you that might know what that means, but we won't dwell on that. The book is Step. It's written by Chris Capehart, and he is our guest today. And we're going to find out what that means and how it impacts us. Great to have you, Chris.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So you're both ORU dudes. What is Youngblood? That sounds kind of weird.
It's kind of like a fraternity, but it's on a Christian campus where we don't actually have fraternities. But I still hang out with my guys from Youngblood to this day. You do too?
My best friends, my business partner today, we were all Youngblood guys.
It's a godly fraternity, Sheila.
I like that, a godly fraternity.
Yes.
That's wonderful.
So you have been you've been pursuing some big dreams in life. You've been mainly in business, yes?
Yes, sir. I've actually with my business partner, Micah, we've been in business for quite a while now, and we have a technology company where we build software for brands and organizations all over the world.
Yeah. Now, but this was probably not the path you saw yourself on. You started out, life was not kind to you early.
I had some interesting scenarios, interesting situations, I guess you could say. You know, I was thinking about this and thinking about where do I start, because I unfortunately experienced quite a few tragedies early in life. Mm-hmm. But I think the most impactful one and the place that I would start is with my mother. So I was living with my mom. She was a single mom. And I remember it was a Tuesday. And every Tuesday morning, I met with my youth pastor and one of my best friends, and we talked about the Wednesday night service. Mm-hmm. I remember getting up that morning, getting into the kitchen, getting ready to go before school, and my mom was there, and she was kind of lingering. It was weird for her to be around that early, and I remember her saying to me, "What are you doing?" And I said the same thing I do every Tuesday morning. I was a teenager.
Sure.
And she kind of, you know, looking back on it, "Oh, okay, well, I love you," and walked away. So I went, I did my Christian duties, being a good teenager, obviously not respectful to my mother in that instance. Went, had that meeting, and then I came back to our family business that afternoon after school. And I was in my cubicle working on some things, and my mom again, I felt her. She came in the cubicle and was just kind of hovering. And I looked back at her and I said, "What do you want?" And those are the last words I ever spoke to my mother. I went home a few hours after that, and I walked to the back door, and there was a note on the door. I remember it had a heart cut out where she had hung it over the handle, and it said, "Please don't come in. I shot myself, and I don't want you to see." And I mean, that just kicks off a lot of my story. And so I actually, to be honest, I was scared in that moment. I didn't want to see her, and I didn't. I made a phone call, and people showed up, police officers showed up, and ultimately my mom had taken her life.
Mm. Where was your dad in all of this?
So my father, to rewind a couple of years to answer that question, so my dad was a pastor. My mom and my dad started a church, and this when I was young, and one night, I found this out later, actually after my mom had committed suicide, but one Sunday evening during a service, three men came into the service, and while my dad was on stage, they confronted him for having affairs with their wives.
Mm. Three men?
Three men. Mm. And so, needless to say, my parents tried to keep it together after that. But when I was around the age of three, they ultimately divorced. And so, you know, my dad did love me and stayed in the area for a while when I was younger, and I would go back and forth. I never knew any of this. Mm. I knew my mom and my mom's family didn't like my dad too much. Mm-hmm. They didn't really enjoy being around him, but I didn't know why, because they never told me. And anyway, so I was pretty close to my dad early on, and then he had married a lady, and some things happened, and he had to leave the town. He had to leave when I was in, I believe, ninth or tenth grade. And it even had come to a point where in 10th or 11th grade, I sat down with my dad and I said, "Dad, I can't have the same relationship with you that I've had before. I'm not going to be able to talk to you anymore if you're going to continue to manipulate me and my mom." And so my dad was not involved. He had moved out of state. He was in Texas. I was living in Arkansas at the time. And so, to be completely honest, the funeral that week, my dad came in town. I didn't even want to see him.
Had your mom struggled with some kind of mental illness before that?
So she had. I didn't know it.
Sure.
So she was diagnosed with bipolar. And what I didn't know is that when I was in, I believe it was second grade, she had tried to commit suicide at that point too, through taking pills. And she was in the hospital for a week. And, you know, at the time, they just told me that, you know, she was sick and not feeling well. And so she'd been fighting this for a long time. You know, what's interesting is I look back on it, and I really believe that a lot of it came from a root of bitterness towards my dad. My mother went to CFNI. She traveled on the worship team. She was a phenomenal woman, and I think she had a hard time getting over what had happened to her. I know she tried. We talked about it a lot, but she was never the same after that. And it's not to say that that was my dad's fault. Obviously, he did some things he shouldn't have. You know, she needed to be able to let go. But I really believe when we don't forgive and can't truly forgive, like the Bible says, it can affect us in a physical way.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm interested, because reading your book, Chris, which is so good, and you talk about your faith. How do you find that path when you have a father who's a pastor who obviously made some serious mistakes, and then your mom, who clearly loved you? I mean, I read the part where you said she sold her dolls at one point because she wanted to give you a birthday party. But in the midst of all that trauma, how did you find a real relationship with Christ?
You know, what's interesting is, even in the imperfection that my parents had, they did always point me towards Christ. And I remember it was in the fifth grade where I really made a decision to go after it hard. And to be honest, from that point on, I never really looked back. And I remember after my mom had passed away, I was sitting with a pastor, and he asked the question, "How are you doing?" And I said, "Well, you know, the Bible says, God said, I set before you life and death, but choose life." He gave us the cheat code ahead of time. And so I looked at him and I said, "I'm choosing life." In fact, I looked at these situations and I knew that God had a plan and a purpose for my life. And I believed that digging into him was the answer, not running away from him. And I could see in those moments, some people run away from God because they don't understand. And I don't understand fully. But I ran to God, and that made all the difference.
So
what does that look like? Because, I mean, it's one thing to say that now when life, you know, things are good. But on a day-to-day basis, that's not easy. I mean, I don't even know if we can do it on our own. How do we go one step at a time to walk that out?
And I think that's, you know, it kind of parlays a little bit into part of the message in the book. And it's simply this. It's, for me, what I've learned is this: I can't do it all at once. I can't figure it all out. But I've put my faith in Jesus. And he clearly says that I'll order your steps. And I said, "Okay, well, you'll order my steps. You order the steps of a righteous man." He also says, "You can plan your way, but I'll order your steps." And I just realized, that's what I can control. today in this moment when I'm feeling depressed, when I had those moments, Sheila, I know you've probably had some similar things that you went through. I heard some of your story. We've talked about it a little bit. You know, when you walked in the water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I had moments like that. So I went to my senior prom the day of my mom's funeral.
Wow.
And I remember seeing a security guard there with a gun and the thoughts in my head going, maybe I should just end it now. Mm-hmm. But it was one step at a time for me. And it was being led by God as to what that step was. Mm-hmm. I remember laying on my uncle's floor the night after my mom had committed suicide and just feeling like I'd been shot in the stomach with a shotgun, not knowing what to do. And God saying, whispering to me in my ear, I've got you. I'm not going to leave you alone. So what I would say to people and what I would say is, you don't have to figure it all out. That's what God does for us. Mm-hmm. You just have to listen and obey and know that He will guide you to that next step.
So why did you write this book? I love the subtitle. I think it's Pursuing Your Dreams in the Midst of Everyday Life. A lot of people tend to, and even after the pandemic, kind of given up on their dreams. Yeah. They seem, I wouldn't even know where to start. What do you say to someone about that?
Yeah, I purposely said in the midst of everyday life because there is no perfect scenario to go after the things that are in your heart.
Yeah.
And I love that. The reality is this, most people get so caught up on what I call in the book the proverbial mile, which is the distance between where you are today and where you want to be. The person you are today, the person you want to be. And when we look at that mile, most of the time we don't move. And my whole encouragement to people, it's incredibly simple. Don't focus on the mile. Don't focus on everything you can't achieve. Focus on the one thing you can today. And I really believe this when we are feeling emotionally down about a situation, overwhelmed about a situation. The antidote, if you will, is to do the opposite of what we feel.
Yeah.
And change your emotions. Mm-hmm. I really believe that. I really believe that. So coming back to that question, it's simple. You can't do it all today. You're going to feel overwhelmed and you're going to feel it often. But there is one thing you can do today. Do that one thing. That one thing is going to give you motivation to keep going and to feel better about yourself, better about the progress that you're making so that you can keep moving forward.
Yeah. A lot of times when I'm not stepping, I'm just stopping.
Yeah.
What happens when we stop?
That's great, because that's actually my favorite chapter in the book. And for those of you that haven't read the book, I say, what happens when you stop stepping? And it's just a bunch of blank pages. Yeah. It's nothing. It's what happens. So if you want nothing, keep doing nothing. But actually, that's a little misleading, because when you stop, you actually are getting further away from the person you want to be or the things that you want to achieve, because you're losing time.
Yeah.
I think that relates to a lot of women where they think, oh, I wish, you know, I wish I could lose this amount of weight, or I wish I could start exercising. But the whole thought is so overwhelming.
Yeah.
You actually end up doing nothing, or in my case, going to Krispy Kreme and getting a donut.
Yeah. So, you know, I think it relates. There's a story I tell about just working out in general. But the idea is this, you know, I had a friend who wanted to lose 100 pounds. And that friend didn't feel like it was possible. He felt like it was way too big. And so we talked, we had this conversation. I said, well, could you eat a healthy meal today? He said, yeah, I think I could eat a healthy meal today. I said, okay, let's do that for 30 days and see what happens. That's it? Let's just do that for 30 days. Let's start creating the habit of doing the right things that you believe you can do. And then you look back and you see how far you've actually come. And that is the principle. That's the power. I think that's one of the things that, you know, the enemy, Satan, tries to get us all confused about, is to think, I don't have time, everyday life.
Yeah.
I have kids. I have bills. I can't do this.
Yeah.
The reality is, you can. It might not be in the timing you thought. It might not look like you thought, but you can be moving a step forward every day. So eat a healthy meal, walk 5 minutes, take 10 minutes of working out, like start somewhere and keep building from there.
I think you're very much onto it, and it doesn't matter if it's the weight I need to lose or it's wanting to be in the Word more. or to write a book, you know? You just got to get some words on paper. To me, I think the stepping is saying, let's move in the right direction on a daily basis and focus on the here and the now, and things will kind of start to take care of themselves.
I think that's all we can do, yeah. Or that's what we should do. And I loved how you put that, Randy. I believe that if we get our mind focused off of what we can't do, mm-hmm. and focused on what we can do, and we do that, mm-hmm. we will look back, not with regret, but we'll look back and be proud of what we've done, what we've accomplished, and the mark that we've left on this world. Yeah.
How did your friend that was trying to lose 100 pounds do?
He did actually really good. He did really good. Yeah, he did. And ultimately what happens is you start there and then you build that momentum. Yeah. And once momentum builds, then you go all in. And that's what I try to get people to. I try to get people to go, let me take some steps, take a few more, and then go, I can do this. I feel it. It's working.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to go further. I'm going to go harder.
Yeah, and that momentum's a big thing.
Yeah.
Hey, whether it's losing weight, because I've done that, or finishing a book, or whatever it is, the momentum's huge.
Well, and the story of the book, I tell this story in the book. So while I was writing the book, I was also growing a technology company, traveling across the U.S., had our first child. I didn't have time.
Yeah.
So my step was 7 a.m. to 8 a.m., twice a week at a coffee shop or in a hotel room. That's what I had. And that's what I did. And all of a sudden, I look back 3 months later, and I've got 3 or 4 chapters.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, I'm going. I'm moving.
Yeah.
And then you know what? I was so excited, I took a week off. I was like, I want to write for a week. And I didn't even like writing at the time. So that momentum can really carry you. But you don't get the momentum unless you do the groundwork.
That's true.
So when somebody gets hold of your book, And they finish it, what is your prayer? What's your hope for people when they finish reading?
My prayer is that they take one step.
Yeah.
And that they believe a little more in themselves, that they believe a little more with the things that God has put in their heart from the time they were young. I want people to know that whether you're young, you're old, you failed a lot, you have multiple tragedies in your life, it doesn't matter. You can start somewhere today. Mm-hmm. Listen to God, take that step, and keep going.
You know, that actually, Sheila, ties in perfectly
Absolutely.
With our outreach right now, because there's a huge, massive problem in the world today. And here at Life Outreach, we said, we're gonna take a step.
Yeah.
And we're going to ask our viewers to take a step. So we're going to ask you to take a step today. Watch this and we'll explain it.
The love between a father and daughter is like no other. But a father should not have to watch his daughter suffer from something that is so preventable.
So often when we're here, we see mothers and children. We hear the stories from mothers. We've seen so many times the broken heart of a mother. And it so often comes down to us telling a story about the mother, the heart of a mother.
Right.
And yet, you know, the heart of our father is also the heart of us as fathers.
It's true.
Okay?
Yeah.
And that role as a father is actually the role of protecting.
While our mission team was at this Angolan clinic, they came to know of the story of Albano and his daughter, Margarita. Isak and John, as fathers, can relate to this love all too well themselves.
A father who literally is the expression of that father's heart.
Right.
This is a man like you and I,
exactly.
A man who wants to protect his precious little child.
But what is a father to do when the enemy attacking your daughter is malnutrition?
The dad was telling us how he's traveled close to 100 kilometers to get here, 7 hours. And this is a father expressing that heart, standing up as a man.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
As a man who says, I have to protect the life of my child. And that's the reality today. This father has done everything he can do, and all he could do got his child here. I want to talk to you, the dads, the fathers watching today. And I want to ask you, will you help us to be the extension of the father's heart?
Yes.
The expression of it, the extension of the father's hand. You give the gift that expresses the Father's heart. You extend His hands and you give the gift of life today with Mission Feeding.
That's right.
That's a tough one for me to watch. As the father of two daughters, I'd do anything for them. And I think that's the heart of the father. And so many of you ladies have helped us over the years. You understand the father's heart as well. But we're coming to you again to say, will you join with us once again in this beautiful life-saving effort we call Mission Feeding? We can't do it without you. I hope that you see the Father's heart and the love we share, because we see it when you partner with us. And Sheila, I know we can really make a difference. We can share the Father's heart with so many people that are hurting right now when people join with us.
Yeah, I've been here for almost 7 years, and I'll never forget my very first trip. You know, you can read statistics and, you know, educate yourself as much as you can, but it's something else when you are just standing there in a malnutrition clinic with moms who, you know, same as me. I mean, I would, as Randy said, I would do anything for my son. And the thought of my child going to bed hungry every night, even though I have done every single thing possible, is just heartbreaking. Man, I've watched some of these moms, because of the drought and the just severe malnutrition, literally digging in the dirt to try and find anything that they could put in the stomach of their child. But the interesting thing for me was, within just a few days, we had gone from being in the malnutrition clinic where some of these little ones didn't even have the energy to cry. I mean, you could tell by the state of their body that they were severely malnourished, but it was everything they could do just to take the next breath. And then to go to a village where we had already set up a mission feeding program and be able to sit there with those red bowls and be able to hand this food to them that looks a little like oatmeal, but actually has everything in that, the protein, the vitamins and minerals they need in that area of the world to really maximize health. And they have to come to school to get the meal. So it's a way of trying to break that cycle of poverty. This is something that James and Betty have been passionate about for years, and they will never stop. And Randy, we've made it possible. We've broken it down in such a way that we can all enter at some level.
Yeah, and you know, because of the years of experience, the people we have in place, the processes we have in place, the relationships that we have globally, we are able to do this at an incredibly economic level. Bottom line for you watching is that your gift of $30 today would help feed three children for 3 months. I mean, that's hard to fathom in today's inflationary economy, but it does. A gift of $50 will help feed five children for 3 whole months. Many of you can give $100. That would feed 10 children. And some of you fathers out there, you can give $1,000 and feed 100 children for the next 3 months. Whatever you can do, we want you to help us reach that goal of feeding 350,000 children this year, this campaign. Will you go online or go to the phone and make the best gift you can? When you do, you will be sharing the Father's heart with people that desperately need to hear it and to feel it. I hope you'll do something. Give the best gift you can and do it now.
Across the continent of Africa, children are suffering and facing severe malnutrition. Lack of rainfall and severe drought has led to one of the deadliest food crises in 40 years. With food reserves gone and many areas experiencing severe famine, we urgently need to replenish supplies to keep feeding the 350,000 children who are counting on us. Through Life's Mission Feeding Outreach, your gift of love can be an answer to prayer for a hurting and hungry child in their time of need. Call now with your life-saving gift of $30, $50, or $100 to help feed and care for 3, 5, or 10 children for 3 full months. With your gift of any amount, we'll send you the Life Planner. Bound in soft-touch leather, this planner will help you in your daily walk, with space for you to record your appointments, goals, inspirational notes, and prayers. With your gift of $100 or more, please request a scripture pen set, perfect companions to the Life Planner. These beautiful wooden pens are inscribed with scripture references to keep your heart focused on God's plans for you. Finally, with your gift of $1,000 or more to help feed and care for 100 children, be sure to request our inspiring bronze sculpture, Let the Children Come. This beautiful bronze is a reminder to care for children around the world in both word and deed. please call, write, or make your gift online today.
My prayer is that we haven't reached this child too late. My prayer is that the therapeutic food that we're bringing this child will save its life. But my other prayer is that we're able to reach the many mothers in villages all over this area, just like Marta, mothers who are so desperate for food that we can reach them before their children end up in malnutrition clinics. You can be an answer to that prayer. You can provide the resources today to enable our mission teams to bring that food to these villages, to bring food to mothers like Marta. So please, I'm asking you today to go to the phone or get online and give the very best gift that you can give. Give the gift of food. Give the gift of life.
I pray you will take that step today and just do whatever you can, because it really went together. You know, we look back over the years, Sheila, and we go, wow, we've done so much, but there's obviously more to do. We just need everyone to do that little thing. There's a story we didn't get to touch on, Chris, that I really want our viewers to hear, because it says so much about this truth that God's lived out through your life. Tell us about your grandfather.
So my grandfather is really the inspiration behind STEP. He was speaking at a conference, and a lady asked him, what is it about being successful? What do you have to do to be successful? Yeah. And he looked at this lady, and he said, have you ever planted a garden? And she said, yeah. And I don't know how he knew she'd planted a garden. He said, well, did you plant a row of corn in that garden? And the lady said, I did, actually. He goes, good. He said, was it a good row of corn? She said, I think so. It was a good row of corn. He said, then you know everything I know about being successful.
Mm. Wow.
You do it one row at a time.
Wow. Mm.
And that lesson to me is STEP. It is breaking down the big goals. My grandfather would say he wasn't an educated man. He wasn't a crazy complex thinker. He was a solve this by taking one step today. Mm-hmm. And I'll do what other people aren't willing to do.
Yeah, I love it.
By taking that step.
And I know that your grandparents are safely home with Jesus now. Yes. I wanted you guys to know, do you know that they were supporters of this ministry? I'm sure they'd be very proud of seeing you sit here today.
I did. I texted my aunt and my uncles and said, I really wish my grandparents would have been here to see this, but they're looking down.
Mm-hmm. Awesome story.
His book is available. You can get it wherever you get books. It's called STEP by Chris Capehart. And we appreciate you being a part of the show. We'll see you again next time.
Tomorrow on Life Today, best-selling author Michael Todd shares the ups and downs while continuing to believe in his son's healing. Tomorrow. Life Today is made possible by the supporters of Life Outreach International. Your gift will be used exclusively for the exempt purposes of Life. The ministry features specific outreaches as examples of the programs it supports and conducts. Gifts are considered to be without restriction as to use unless explicitly stipulated by the donor. The ministry is a member of the ECFA.